त्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू अवर भगवद गीता पार्ट ऑफ कोर्स ऑफ द भक्ति शास्त्री पार्ट। सो नाउ वी आर गोइंग टू डिस्कस द थर्ड चैप्टर। इन द लास्ट क्लास वी डिस्कस्ड अबाउट हाउ द वैदिक अंडरस्टैंडिंग ऑफ द यूनिवर्स बीइंग कंट्रोल्ड बाय कॉन्शियस बीइंग्स द देवतास is not contradictory to the scientific understanding of the universe operating according to mechanisms. Mechanisms and persons are not contradictory, but complementary. So, I would like to conclude that section by giving one more additional example to illustrate how both of them can be complementary. Let's look at the verse today, and then we'll move forward to that section. Yes. Annad bhavanti bhutani parjanyad anna sambhava yajnad bhavati parjanyo yajnah karma samudbhava. So annad bhavanti bhutani. All living beings subsist on grains. And where do grains come from? The word anna can be used generically for all food, or it can be used specifically for grains. Both are valid uses. Barchanyat anna sambhava. So, grains come from rains. So, parjanya. Parjanya was also the name of the father of Nanda Maharaj. Parjanyat anna sambhava. So, they were dependent on cows. Cows needed grass. So, in that sense, the names related with nature are natural in such settings. Parjanyad anna sambhava. Yajnad bhavati parjanyo. So, where do grains come from? Yajna. And yajna karma samudbhava. Yajna comes from karma. This and the next verse are related. So, we will discuss both together. Let's look at the next verse also. Karma brahmodbhavam viddhi. ब्रह्माक्षरसमुद्भवं तस्मात् सर्वगतं ब्रह्मा नित्यं यज्ञे प्रतिष्ठितं। सो कर्म ब्रह्मोद्भवं विद्धि। सो वेयर डू कर्म कम फ्रॉम? कर्म इज प्रिस्क्राइब्ड इन द वेदास। सो हियर द वर्ड ब्रह्म रेफर्स टू वेदास। द वर्ड ब्रह्म कैन हैव मेनी मीनिंग्स। सो इन 3.15 हियर इट रेफर्स टू द वेदास। सो ब्रह्म अक्षरसमुद्भवं। So, Akshara refers to the Supreme Lord. That Lord is infallible. That Lord never falls. That Lord never deteriorates. So, Akshara. So, the Vedas come from the Absolute Truth, Akshara. Tasmat sarvagatam brahma. Therefore, that all-pervading Brahma, nityam yagya pratishthitam, is always situated in yagya. So, now this last part is something interesting, which I will come to. But let's look at the cyclic sequence which precedes that. So, we are currently looking at the second section of the Bhagavad Gita. First section is Karma Yoga is better for you as you are not qualified for Jnana Yoga. Second section was, if you are not qualified even for Karma Yoga, then practice Karma Kanda. So, we are discussing this section. So, let's look here now. The cycle of sacrifice. So, looking back at the two verses we just discussed. So, annad bhavanti bhutani. So, bhutani is here. How do where do living entities get their subsistence from? From anna. And then, parjanya anna sambhava. Rains produce grains. Yajnad bhavati parjanyo. Yajna produces rains. And then, karma brahma. Then, yajna karma samudbhava. That yajna comes from karma. We'll discuss this causal connection a little later, but just let's look at the cycle. Karma brahmodbhavam viddhi. So, karma brahmodbhavam viddhi means that karma is told to us in Vedas. So now, the Krishna doesn't complete the cycle over here, but in the next verse, he uses the word evam pravartitam chakram. Chakram. So the chakra is completed when the living entities come to know about the Vedas and live according to the Vedas. The cycle which Krishna describes is still over here. But how it gets concluded? when the living entities learn to live according to the Vedas, do their karma and perform yajna. So yesterday we discussed about this point here, how yajna produces rains. Now, to understand this further, how the mechanistic explanation and the personalist explanation are not contradictory but complementary. The mechanist means mechanical, based on mechanics. So there's mechanist explanation and there is personalist explanation. Personalist means there are persons who are in charge. So let's consider a billiards board. In billiards, there is a long rectangular table with holes at various corners, and there's a long stick which the players use, and they are meant to hit the balls with the sticks, and the goal of the game is that the ball should go into the holes. Now, if somebody had a top view of the camera, of the billiards board using a camera, then within the billiards board one will practically never see the players. All that one will see is the sticks. The stick is moving forward, the stick is hitting this bunch of balls, and balls are moving in this direction, that ball goes into the hole. The stick hits this ball, that ball hits that ball, and that ball sends that ball into the hole, like that. So if we just looked at the billiards board itself, all that we would see is the interaction of sticks and balls. Now, if we apply the scientific mode of analysis to this, now, the movement of all the balls along the surface of the billiards board will be according to the laws of mechanics. So, if a particular ball goes into a hole when a stick hits it, then we can find, this stick hit it at this force, at this angle, and that's why this ball went into the hole. So, as far as the laws of mechanics are concerned, they are valid. At the same time, the laws of mechanics offer a correct but not complete explanation. Why correct but not complete? Because the balls are going into the holes not just because they are being hit at a particular force, hit with a particular force by the players. That is there. The particular quantity of the force is there. But why are the players hitting at that force with that angle? That is because they have particular training, they have particular expertise, and they have particular desires. Okay, I want that ball to go into the hole. So if I hit this ball like this, it will graze that ball and that will go into the hole. Like that. So the point is that the mechanist explanation is correct. That yes, according to certain laws of mechanics, the balls will go into the holes when they are hit in a particular way. But along with the mechanist explanation, there is a personalist explanation also. The personalist explanation is that there are persons with skills and desires who are playing the billiards game. And they are hitting the balls with the sticks in particular angles, and that's why the balls are going into the holes. So both these explanations are complementary, they're not contradictory. Now, similarly, rains falling because of particular mechanisms, say the water getting evaporated and the water condensing through the medium of the clouds at the appropriate change of PVT, that mechanism is correct, but it is not complete. So the mechanist and personalist explanations don't have to be contradictory. They can also be complementary. Now, so yajnyat bhavati parjanyo, going back to this chart. Yajnyat bhavati parjanyo. Now, before that, where it is what? Yajna karma samudbhava. What does yajna karma samudbhava means? That the karma is not just our worldly obligations. And actually, a part of our karma is to do yajna. And in today's society, many people think that it is their duty to take care of their family members, to take care of themselves, to do duties to their relatives, and they think this is what is our duty, this is what God has told us to do, and this is what we will do. Yes, that is definitely true, that we have to do, but that is not the complete scope of our duties. Actually, taking care of the one's children, say, is something which even animals do. You know, taking care of family members is something which even the animals do in many ways. So, the birds take care of their babies. So, that and that alone doesn't complete the scope of human duties. Now, human duties involve rising to a higher level, where we take care not just of others' bodies, but take care of others' souls also. And when also when we take care not just of our bodies, but our own souls also. If we're just taking care of the bodies, our own bodies and the bodies of our loved ones, then we are doing our duties, but we're not doing our complete duties. So, Srila Prabhupada explains that a mother's or a parent's love for her children is natural and necessary, but it is not spiritual. It is natural and necessary. What is the meaning of natural and necessary? Natural means when a couple, they unite and give birth to a child, by the arrangement of material nature, they develop affection for that child. So, by the arrangement of nature, their affection is created. It is natural and it is necessary. Necessary means that such affection actually enables us to live in this world. In many species, when the young ones are born, at that time they need the care of their parents. Without that, they will not be able to grow. So, that is necessary. So, by the arrangement of nature, what is necessary is also arranged for through the feelings for affection that are there. Now, this is in no way meant to minimize the sacrifice that the parents do for the children. That is definitely true. That they do sacrifice and that is laudable. At the same time, that doesn't make it spiritual. Spiritual is that which is connected with the soul. As researchers have studied nature, and the study of the natural behavior of animals, of living beings in their natural habitats is called as ethology. So ethologists have found that animals behave in fascinating ways. For example, this weaver bird, and this bird, when it unites with the she bird, and then the bird becomes pregnant, then they both search around and find some good hollow in a tree, and then they put the female lays the eggs and puts them, and then they cover the eggs, and they keep they cover the eggs. They cover the hollow in the hole itself with some proper covering, mud and some branches and brambles, so that no snakes or predators can go inside and eat the eggs. And then after that, the she bird keeps coming and looking at them. And when the eggs are to be hatched, then she comes and stays inside with the birdlets, with the eggs. And the he-bird keeps giving a food to the she-bird. And then as the birdlets, eggs hatch and the birdlets come out, then the he-bird has to get more and more food. Because now food is needed not just for the she-bird, but it's also needed for the birdlets. And when the he-bird gives food, the she-bird first gives food to the birdlets and then takes herself. And then after that, when the birdlets start becoming bigger and bigger and they need more food, then the bird comes and tells us, she birdlet, it's too much now, I can't do it. You also have to take a job, come out now. So then they become double income couples. You know, the she bird also comes out and then they cover up the hole in the tree, keeping only a small out opening so that they can drop food. And then both the she bird and the he bird, they go out and search for food. And now inside some eggs have hatched earlier, some eggs have hatched later. So the eggs that have hatched earlier, those birdlets are bigger. The other birdlets are smaller. So naturally when the parent birds come and drop food into the hollow, the bigger birdlets are able to catch it. When the bigger birdlets catch it, they don't devour the food themselves. They first give it to the smaller birdlets. And then later on the smaller birdlets are fed, then they take the food themselves. So we see this affection among family members there in nature also. At one level, we can say it's so touching and moving that there is a spirit of sacrifice even in animals, lower species. So, and if it is not there in human species, that is so unfortunate. Right? But another level is that if we live only at that level, then we are actually not practicing spiritual life. We are not actually living at a human level. Because the privilege of human life is to explore and relish our spiritual avenue. So therefore, karma is not just taking care of our family members. So our duties are not just taking care of family members. It's important. We have to do that. But we also have to connect with God. So that we discussed about our horizontal relationship and vertical relationships. You know, only in human form can we pursue the vertical relationship with Krishna. So it's a special privilege. And the performance of yajna essentially is the opportunity to, is the means by which we can pursue the vertical relationship. So when we perform yajna, then yajna enables us to acknowledge the higher authority, centering ultimately on the Supreme Being, Krishna. So therefore, karma, yajna karma samudbhava. So samudbhava means born along with that, concomitant with that. So along with karma is yajna, included. So we shouldn't think that when we go to a temple or we chant some holy names, we are doing some favor to God. Actually, I don't have to do it, but just to be a good person, I am doing it. It's a part of our duty as human beings to take care of our material as well as our spiritual side. So karma brahma udbhavam vidhi. That's why from where do we know, come to know about a karma? We come to know about a karma from Shastra. Therefore it is said brahma aksharasam. Karma brahmodbhavam vidhi. So we move back. Karma brahmodbhavam vidhi. So karma comes from the Vedas. Karma comes. When we want to know about our karma, we cannot know it by our own speculative efforts. We have to seek the scriptural wisdom to know what are the duties that we are expected to perform. Now, in this whole cycle, actually, the Lord is the source of everything. Specifically, and ultimately, the Lord is the source of all living beings, the Lord is the source of nature, the Lord is the source of the yajnic rituals, the Lord is the source of the scriptures. But specifically, the Lord is not visible to us. The Lord is not directly visible to us. Because the Lord Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is spiritual, whereas we are currently at the material level of consciousness. So therefore, the spiritual realm and the material realm, what is the connecting link? That is the scripture. The spiritual realm becomes accessible to us in the material realm through scriptural wisdom. And the scriptural wisdom is not just theoretical, it is transformational. It gives us practical processes of yoga by which we can raise ourselves, transform ourselves to rise from the material level to the spiritual level. So that's why, although Krishna is the source of everything, in this context it is said that Brahma Akshara Samudbhavam, that the Brahma, the scriptures, come from the Supreme Lord. Brahma Akshara Samudbhavam. So, by scriptural wisdom, the Lord becomes manifested. So that, now let's look at the last line of this verse. So we'll come back to it. Tasmat Sarvagatam Brahma Nityam Yajne Pratishthitam. So, Sarvagatam Brahma means that Brahma is present everywhere. The absolute truth is there everywhere. Sarvagatam Brahma. But how do we come to know about the Brahma? Nityam Yajne Pratishthitam. He is always accessible to us through yajna. Nityam yajne. So that means the human beings, they can access the absolute truth through the performance of yajna. Let's look back at the cycle once again. So here you see that Krishna, the Akshara, is the source and goal of everything. But how will he be accessible to us? He is not visible to us. So he has given the Vedas, and in the Vedas our prescribed duties are given, and the prescribed duties that connect us with Krishna, with him, is yajna. So therefore, by the means of yajna, we become connected with the absolute truth. That's why tasmat sarvagatam brahma nityam yajne pratishthitam. So yajna makes the universal accessible to us. That the absolute truth is sarvagatam, is universal. But the universal becomes accessible to us through yajna. Now, when we understand this point, we recognize the importance of yajna. the Lord is there everywhere, but how do we perceive Him? So Yajna offers us the means to perceive Him. So what does essentially Yajna involve? We discuss Yajna essentially involves sacrifice. When we perform sacrifice for the pleasure of the Absolute, we give up what we could have used for our pleasure, for His pleasure. And in this way, we connect with the Absolute Truth. So Yajna makes the universal accessible to us. And therefore, Tasmat Sarvagatam Brahma Nityam Yajne Pratishthitam. And always that all-pervading Absolute is accessible to us as Yajna. So, after we understand this cycle, so we participate in the cycle through Yajna. And when we participate in the cycle, by doing Yajna, then the cycle continues. Then we get grains, and that's how we are able to survive. So, just like, what do we mean by cycle? The government gives water supply, and the government tells us certain rules to follow. So we follow the rules, and we pay the taxes. So from the government, water is coming to us, and from us, taxes are going to the government. And this goes on cycle. If we stop paying the taxes, then what happens? The government stops giving water. So there is, for the cycle to go on, we have to keep doing yajna. We have to keep paying taxes. Similarly, the devatas are providing us necessities. And when we do the yajnas, then the cycle keeps going on. So the looking at, so that means, now this is we'll look back at this cycle. First, let's understand this simple cycle. You know, there is the higher universal government, which involves devatas who are headed by the Supreme Lord. This is like the government, and we are the citizens. Especially human beings are expected to abide by the laws of God. And animals, they don't abide by the laws of the state. Now, if there is a red signal, and then a donkey is going along the signal, the donkey will just walk through the signal. And there is a young person on a motorcycle, and that person says, I also go. What's the right signal? Red signal zoop, goes through it. And immediately the policeman will blow the whistle and stop, stop, stop. And then may give the ticket. May give the ticket to him as a fine. He says, hey, but the donkey was walking through, you didn't fine him, why are you fining me? He says, because you're a bigger donkey. The donkey is not expected to follow rules. We are expected to follow rules. So, actually, the point here is that the donkey doesn't have the higher intelligence. We human beings have the higher intelligence. So, we are expected to perform yajna, and thereby we will get the necessities that we are ordained to get. That we need for our living, and the cosmic arrangement gives us. If we maintain the cycle. So now, how is this simple cycle which Krishna has talked about? Devatas satisfying us and we satisfying the devatas. How is this related with this particular cycle, more complex cycle which we see over here? Actually, it's the same continuation essentially. But we come to the way we practically implement the cycle is, the role of the devatas is in ensuring that parjanya is provided. And for us living beings, we need food. So in a sense, we could say that this part, parjanya, this refers to how the parjanya comes, that is the devatas. And the whole remaining part from bhutani to yajna. From bhutani, vedas, karma and yajna. This is our part. So when we do these three things, we study the vedas, understand our karma and do the yajna within that. Then we are cooperating. And the devatas, what do? They are in charge of the rains and they give the rains by which we get grains. So in this way, the cycle is maintained. Now Krishna tells in the next verse, what happens if one doesn't maintain that cycle? Before we go into that, let's look at Srila Prabhupada's purport quickly. So Prabhupada's essential point here is that the devatas are not the Supreme, the Supreme Lord is Supreme and devatas are His parts. So he quotes from Balde Vidya Bhushan about how the Supreme Lord is Yajna Purusha and everybody is benefited by Him. Everybody is, He is the Supreme Beneficiary, He is the Lord of the Devatas. So then Prabhupada says how, when we take prasad, then we protect ourselves from the infection by material nature. So prasad is like a vaccine. So he says, one who does not do so, that means, one does not take prasad, continues to increase the volume of sinful reaction and thus prepares the next body to resemble hogs and dogs, to suffer the resultant reactions of all sins. And then Karma Brahmodbhavam Vikti, Prabhupada quotes in this purport from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it's a famous verse. It says how the scriptures come from the Lord. So here Prabhupada is quoting for this point. Brahma Akshara Samudbhavam. So the Brahma, the scriptures come from the absolute truth. So how do we understand this? He is quoting from the Asya Mahato Bhutasya Nishvasitam Etad Yadrigvedo Yajurveda Samavedo Atharva Angirasaha. So Asya Mahato Bhutasya Nishvasitam. So from the breathing of the great personality of Godhead, Mahato Bhutasya Nishvasitam. Nishvasitam means breathing. So from his breathing, the Vedas come out. So that means, now Prabhupada quotes about Brahma Samhita, how the Lord can do anything. With any of his senses, he can do any of the activities. So even by his breathing, sound can come out. Now Krishna will tell about what will happen if we do not follow this cosmic cycle. Evam pravartitam chakram nanuvartayatiha yaha aghayurindriyarama mogam partha sajivati. So evam pravartitam. Pravartitam means that which is established. So the cycle, the chakra that is established by the Vedas, na anuvartayatiha yaha anuvartayati means that which is followed, adopted. Na anuvartayati means not followed. Yaha, that person. That person is aghayur. That person's life is filled with agha. Agha means sin. Indriyaramo. And what is that person doing? Is trying to delight in the senses. Indriyaramo. And what happens to the life of such a person? Mogham partha sajivati. So mogha is waste. The word mogha will come again in the Bhagavad Gita. On several occasions, most famously it comes in 9.12, waste. So, mogham partha sajivati, such a person's whole life goes in vain. So, one who does not follow the cycle, such a person, the person's life is filled with sin, lives for sense gratification, lives in vain. Now, people generally have a definition of sin that is relative. So, for example, there is sin and there is crime. So, crime is that which is considered to be legally wrong. And sin is that which is considered to be religiously wrong, morally wrong. So, when the scriptures are the governing laws, are the governing guidebooks of the state, then crime and sin will be the same. Because the government will act according to the scriptures. But when the government is not acting according to scriptures, then crime and sin need not be the same. And when crime and sin are not the same, then often that which is a sin may not be considered to be a crime at all. For example, today in most countries, abortion has been legalized. So, abortion is actually nothing but cold-blooded murder. And the tragedy is that there is a systematic program of disinformation. Disinformation means not giving proper information by which people don't come to know that the whole process of abortion involves killing of a child. So when the prospective abortion, those who want to abort, they are shown pictures using sonography or the technology of how the child is in the womb and how the child may be killed, then it is, they often change their mind. No, I cannot kill, this is my child. So, actually speaking, it is a sin. It is a grievous sin. But unfortunately, according to today's laws, it is not considered a sin at all. So, Prabhupada especially considered cow slaughter and abortion to be grievous sins that current society is performing, and because of which there are tremendous karmic reactions coming up as consequences to this. So there are documentaries made like The Silent Scream and others which show how the child is killed So some you, there are various methods which abortion is performed, but in many cases, say there is a clamp-like object which is inserted into the womb, and when the infant is so small, the infant sees that something is coming into that womb, comes terror-stricken and moves to the other extremity of the womb, and then that clamp-like object is comes and tries to catch the and the embryo escapes, and then the clamp-like object comes and tries to catch it again. Of course, now there is the abortionist, the doctor who is holding on and trying to find. And again, the clamp-like object comes, and again the child escapes, and again the clamp-like object comes, and again the child escapes. But it's a small space, and the child is small. The child ultimately doesn't have any energy. So then, finally, tack, the clamp-like object catches the child. Usually, they catch the neck of the child, and then crush. The child's body is tender. The neck is crushed. The whole neck just crumbles, and then the clamp-like object often has some sharp parts, so by which, and the hands are the tiny hands will be there. The hands will be cut off, legs will be cut off, and then they are all made into small parts because then they have to be brought out from the womb, and finally the head is crushed into small, small pieces and is brought out. So actually, it's very ghastly. So when we see it, we understand it is so, so brutal. But what happens is, by today's laws, it is considered to be legal entirely. So, of course, there are situations, for example, when the mother's life is in threat, it's a genuine threat, then abortion can be accepted, because if one person's life is a threat to another person's life, then the person can protect oneself. And there it's not so much killing as it is self-defense. So it's a different situation. It's an exceptional situation. In most situations, actually, the mother's life can also be preserved and a child can also be brought out, even if there is some danger, if the doctors manage carefully. But that is the situation when at that time, for one's protection, the needful can be done. But in other situations, it's actually very, very distressing. What happens, very horrifying also. But unfortunately, crime and sin are divorced in many ways today. And because of this, most people go on doing immoral, sinful activities, and they think that everything is a subjective. Okay, you believe that is wrong, so you don't do it. We believe it is right, so we will do it. So with this kind of social value set, which people have, life becomes filled with sin for people. So, aghayur indriya ramo. The scriptures do not necessarily ban or reject all sense gratification. Now, there is dharma, artha, kama. So, kama is also one of the purusharthas. And kama, when it is done within the precincts of dharma, it is perfectly acceptable. So, in fact, we'll see that in 7th chapter, how Krishna says, I am kama, which is not contrary to dharma principles. So, when we talk about this, the point here, important point is that Krishna is saying aghayur indriya ramo, so that when people engage in sense gratification without considering the scriptures, without considering the higher laws of God, then that is aghayur. That makes their life filled with sin. Aghayur indriya ramo. So today, people, they neglect the scriptures, they neglect the yajna, they neglect the performance of their duties to God, and then they seek enjoyment. At enjoyment, what happens? They want indriya aram. Now, if you see the previous verses, Krishna has said that whatever kama dhuk, he has used the word kama dhuk earlier. So, whatever are desirable things, that will be provided by nature. If we see the demigods, it's not that they have to all live like ascetics. Indra, there are apsaras in his court. Indra can also have sense gratification. And the asuras, they also want sense gratification. But the difference is, Vishnu Bhakta Smrito Deva Asurastha Viparyaya. Our devatas seek sense gratification while following the laws of the Absolute Truth, the guidelines of the Supreme Lord. The asuras defy those guidelines and seek enjoyment thereof. Therefore, there is a radical difference between the two. And that difference has to be bridged. So how do we bridge it? By not changing God's laws to bring them to in conformity with man's laws, but by elevating human understanding so that it is able to harmonize itself with the divine revelation. Now, here Krishna says, if one doesn't live like, if one just lives, seeks enjoyment, indriya aram, one seeks sense gratification without understanding and harmonizing with the will of the Lord, without doing yajna, then the person does so many sinful activities. And if the person does sinful activities, then what is the result? Mogham partha sajivati. The whole life is mogha. Mogha means it goes waste. Why does the life go waste? So, from the spiritual perspective, when a person doesn't seek the absolute truth, and the person simply continues on the cycle of birth and death. So, we saw in the Ishopanishad how such people are called as Yeke Chatmahano Janaha. In the third mantra of Ishopanishad, we discussed about how these are the killers of the soul. The same point, Mogham Partha Sajivati. These people live in vain. They live in vain. Why do they live in vain? Because they don't know what is the ultimate goal of life, and they don't care to know. And they live in defiance and violation of the will of the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada quotes in the purport, the Mammonist philosophy. The Mammonist philosophy is work very hard and your sense gratification is condemned hearing. So we don't have to just, it's not that we can't enjoy, but there has to be harmonization with the will of God. So Prabhupada writes nicely, the yajna system is planned in such a way that the sensory conscious person may satisfy their desires without becoming entangled in the reaction of sense gratificatory work. So that means when there is dharma artha and then there is kama, then one doesn't get entangled so much. Gradually one will get purified and elevated and ultimately liberated. And then now within these yajnas, there are multiple yajnas which are done for different devatas. But ultimately, the Yageshwar is Lord Vishnu. So for example, when we talk about sacrifices, if we look at, say, the Daksha sacrifice, which is mentioned in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So when Sati comes, she sees that, there are shares for all the devatas, but there is no share for my Lord, for Shiva. So she feels enraged by that. Now, the point is that all the devatas get their sacrifice. Shares, but ultimately, aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhareva cha. In the ninth chapter, Lord Krishna will tell how he is the bhokta for all the yajnic rituals. Aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhareva cha. So he is the bhokta, he is the ultimate goal for all the yajnas. So there we'll talk about yajna a little bit more, 9.23.24. He says about how he is the bhokta, and even when other gods are worshipped, ultimately it is he who is being worshipped. Yepi anya devata yajante shraddhayan vitaha. Tepi maame vakam tejanta vidhi purvakam. That when the other devatas are worshipped, they are also people. I am only being worshipped, but I am being worshipped improperly over there. So the point is, all the yajnas are ultimately meant to help one to become God conscious. And if one doesn't become God conscious, that means Krishna conscious, then one doesn't fulfill the purpose of yajnas. So here, Krishna concludes. He gives instruction by contrasting. So first he has said that do yajna, then you will stay free from karmic bondage. Then he has said, the devata said, you satisfy the devata, they will satisfy you, you will be satisfied. You will live happily in this way and you will attain Shreya. That was 3.10, 11, 12. And now he is saying in 3.16, he is giving the alternative trajectory. If you don't do this, then what will happen? Aghayur indriya ramo mogham partha sajivati. That one will live in vain. So after describing this, now let's go to the next section of the Gita. So the next section is 17 to 24. Krishna is telling Arjuna, if you are qualified for Jnana Yoga, still practice Karma Yoga to set example. So now Krishna, so remember the spiral that we discussed. So Krishna is saying practice Karma Yoga, and he says if you are not practice Karma Yoga, if you are not qualified for Karma Yoga, then do Karma Kanda. By that, you will come to the, you will stay from bond, free from bondage, and you will also get your material necessities fulfilled. But if you think that you are qualified not just for Karma Yoga, but for Gyan Yoga, still practice Karma Yoga to set an example for others. So let us look at the point of setting an example for others now. Yastva atmaratireva syad, atmatruptascha manavaha, atmanyeva cha santushtas, tasya karyam na vidyate. Yastva atmaratireva syad, atmarati. So one who has rati, rati means attachment, attraction. So one whose rati is inwards. Atmatruptascha manavaha. One who is satisfied internally. Atmani eva cha santushtas. So, and one who delights within. One who is illuminated within, one who delights within. Tasya karyam na vidyate. Such a person has no duty. It's interesting now. What does it mean such a person has no duty? Here Krishna is now talking about a person who has transcended the scope of duty. In this world, as long as we take something from someone, we are expected to give something back. And that is how we live in a reciprocal world. Where in society we take something from others and we are expected to give something to others. So for example, the parents take care of the children and the children grow up. The children are also expected to help their parents, take care of their parents. So there is a principle of reciprocity. When we take something from someone, we are expected to give them back to that person. So we take things from the devatas, then we are supposed to do yajna for them. Now Krishna is saying, if somebody is self-satisfied, somebody is not seeking anything externally, and for such a person, tasya karyam na vidyate. For such a person, there is no duty. So atmarati reva syad. So one who is internal, that's why the word atma comes three times. Now self. Atmarati, atmatrupta, atmasantushta. So when a person is turned inwards, when a person is satisfied inwards, person is illuminated inwards, so at that time the person doesn't seek anything external. So when we don't seek anything externally, then we are freed from our external obligations. Tasya karyam na vidyate. For a person, there is no duty. This is an elevated stage. Who can come to this stage? Actually, the Gyan Yogis are expected to be at this stage. The Gyan Yogis renounce the world and go to the forest for practicing meditation. And when they practice meditation, through that meditation, introspective meditation, they expect to transcend their material existence and return back to the spiritual realm of existence. So now, Prabhupada cuts down to, brings this down to practical level. He said that such a Krishna conscious person is no longer interested in material activities and no longer takes pleasure in material arrangements like wine, women and similar infatuations. So the point is, one doesn't need anything material. Now Krishna says, yes, such a person doesn't need to do any duty, but now he will twist this argument and say, yeah, but there's no reason for him to not do the duty also. Naiva tasya krute enartho, na krute neha kaschana, na chasya sarva bhuteshu, kaschidartha vyapashrayaha, vyapashrayaha. So naiva tasya kruten artho. For kruten artho, kruten means to do by the discharge of duty. Artha is purpose. Now that person has no purpose to fulfill by doing the duty. Naiva tasya kruten artho. But then na kruteneha kaschana, a kruteneha. But at the same time, that person has no reason to not do duty also. That person is transcendental. So doing duty or not doing duty, both are equivalent. Why is that? Nachasya sarva bhuteshu. Such a person, for all living beings, kaschid arthavyapashrayaha. Is arthavyapashrayaha. That person is not dependent on any other living being. Person doesn't take shelter of any other living being. So here, Krishna is talking about sarva bhuteshu vyapashrayaha. This is not referring to the absolute truth. See, here Krishna is not talking about bhakti. He is not introduced bhakti so much in this chapter. Although there is an indirect reference to the Supreme Lord in 3.9 by Yajna, work for the purpose of Yajna. But there is no direct reference to Maam till now in the third chapter. So here, Sarvabhuteshu doesn't include a Supreme Lord. Yes, all of us are ultimately dependent on the Supreme Lord. But here is talking about not the vertical interactions, the horizontal interactions. So because this person is self-satisfied, person is not taking anything from anyone, so therefore, nakashchit sarvabhuteshu, nachasi sarvabhuteshu, kashchit arthavipashrayaha. So that person doesn't need anything from anyone, so that person therefore is not dependent on anyone. This is not a brahmana. Now brahmana is still a part of society. A brahmana gives knowledge and takes charity. So yajna dana tapa. So there are various duties that a person does. Yajan yajan, pathan pathan, dan parigraha. So the brahmana does these activities and they are important. Yajan yajan is performed. Person performs yajna and then goes to the places and where the yajman, where the person who wants to do yajna, wants him to do yajna, and he does the yajna also. Pathan pathan. Himself studies scripture, brahmana studies scripture, and they teach scripture also to others. And then dana, they do charity, and then parigraha, they accept charity also. So when the brahmanas, normally they receive charity, but if they get a lot of charity, then they give the charity back also. So generally in sacrifices, when big sacrifices are performed, when the king comes, for example, Dashrath Maharaj performs the sacrifice. So at the end of the sacrifice, the brahmana that represents Dashrath Maharaj expresses gratitude to him, and he says, "Dad, you know, you have come to my place and honored me by gracing this place and by performing the sacrifice. So as a charity, I give my whole kingdom to you." So now, Dashrath Maharaj is fully confident. The brahmana is not interested in the kingdom. Otherwise, who will be ready to give a kingdom like that? But actually, he is ready. And the king sees that it is by the arrangement of the Lord that I have been given the kingdom and I should use it in the Lord's service. So the brahmana is seen as a representative of the Lord. So he gives the full kingdom. And what do the brahmanas do? They say, Vishwamitra and other rishis, whoever are there, they say, "Yes, you know, we accept this gift, but we have no need for this kingdom, so we'll give it back to you. And you rule it according to the principles of dharma as given in the scriptures." So this is the way dana parigraha happens. So these are brahmanas. So the point which I'm making is, Krishna is not talking here about brahmanas. Brahmanas are also within the fold of varnashram, and they also have to do exchanges. So they do something for others and they get something for others. Here Krishna is talking about a renunciate. A person who is either a sannyasi or is entirely outside the... Sannyasis are almost outside the varnashram fold. They are the topmost, but from the topmost they are moving further outwards. So the sannyasis are there and they are practicing. So those who renounce the world, they practice Jnana Yoga, so they can attain liberation. So they are not taking anything from anyone, they don't need to give anything to anyone. So now Prabhupada explains. Prabhupada is explaining all this from the devotional perspective, and he says a devotee does not have to discharge any other obligations. A Krishna conscious person does not take shelter of any man or demigod. Whatever he does in Krishna consciousness is sufficient in the discharge of the obligation. So this means that the Krishna conscious person is, there are horizontal obligations, there's vertical obligation. So if one is having no horizontal reciprocations, then one can just focus on the vertical and one can start interacting with the absolute truth. For a devotee, the devotee knows the absolute truth is Krishna. A transcendentalist may not know the absolute truth is Krishna, then they will focus just on their conception of Brahman at that time. And gradually, by the mercy of devotee, the Supreme Lord, they may develop a clearer understanding of what that absolute truth is. So, next verse. Tasma dasaktah satatam karyam karma samachara asakto hi acharan karma paramapnoti purushanam. Tasma means therefore. So why therefore? In the previous verse you said that this detached person, it makes no difference to detached person whether to do duty or to not do duty. Therefore, asaktah satatam. Therefore, Arjuna, while staying always detached, karyam karma samachara. So, do your karya, do your prescribed duty. Why? What will happen by that? Asakto hi acharan karma. By performing work with detachment, with asakta, without attachment, paramapnoti purushaha. You will attain the Supreme Absolute Truth. Paramapnoti. So in this way, what Arjuna is being told is, do your duty. So Krishna is telling over here to Arjuna that, yes, if you think that you are so self-satisfied, that you don't need a kingdom, You don't need to be with your family. You can just go in the jungle and be satisfied there. Fine. But then also, it is better. So then, actually, if you are so self-satisfied, if you are so transcendental, then it should make no difference to you whether you are in the forest or whether you are in a city. So Krishna is exactly turning around the same argument. The same point is, I am so transcendental that I don't need to do any duty. Yes, so if you are so transcendental, then doing duty will also not make any difference to you. So, somebody will say, I am so transcendental that sometimes what happens is some young students come and they feel, oh, our college studies are so troublesome, we have to do so much studies and give exams and pass exams. We just join full time. We feel so attracted by Krishna consciousness. So now, in general, in India, education is important. Education makes for a strong career, for a stable career. So generally, devotees are encouraged to complete their education and then join if they want to. If they join prematurely, if they have some difficulties later, then they may have problems in settling back in a career. And more importantly is that actually one cannot just change the trajectory of one's life based on just some feelings that come along. Now, one may find material life difficult, so one may think I'll become a renunciate. But then, what if one finds problems in renounced life also, then where will one go at that time? So, actually it is frustration with material life is not a sufficient qualification for spiritual life. Frustration with material life alone will not lead us to spiritual life. Frustration with worldly life will not lead to renounced order. Actually, there has to be positive attraction for spiritual life. And a positive attraction is tested and demonstrated by sustained commitment. So the positive attraction, if somebody says, I want to be fixed in service to Krishna, then that, how real is that desire? It is tested and demonstrated. So tested means it's for myself, it's a test. You know, yes, today I may feel frustrated with material life, so I start practicing spiritual life. But then day in, day out, month after month, year after year, steadily when we practice, so it's a test for us and it's a demonstration for others. It's tested and demonstrated. So, when that is there, then one can, if one so desires, renounce the world and focus on spiritual life. But then the point is, so if somebody says, I'm so transcendental, I don't care for my studies. And fine, if you're so transcendental, then whether you study or not will make no difference to you. Just study then. Set a good example for others. So, actually, here Krishna is turning the argument around and saying to Arjuna that, yes, for that person who is so transcendental, the externals don't matter. So, because the externals don't matter so much, so whether the person is in the forest or in the city, it will make not much difference. So, better be in the society and act over there. So, now in the next three, Arjuna Krishna will give, after this, examples. He will give the example of Janaka, that he's given his own example. And then he will again reiterate to Arjuna, you should act. But here he is giving a general principle, which he will demonstrate in the next verse. Tasmat asaktaha sadatam. Therefore, always being detached. Stay detached, but do your work. Karyam karma samachara. Asakto hi acharan karma. So, if you act with detachment, then what will happen? Here, for the first time, Krishna is talking about Param apnoti purusha. You will attain the supreme destination. First time means, he's using the word param, and in a sense, he's referring to himself. It's not a direct reference. Who is the supreme? The supreme is Krishna. Krishna is not using mom over here, but still. Param apnoti purusha. So, one will attain the supreme. So, Krishna is saying that, just by doing one's duty, one can attain the supreme. And how should one do the best duty? Detachment. You say, but now Arjuna may get a question, but I have seen that most people, if they want liberation, then they renounce the world. He says, no, there are examples of people who are in the world and they also attained liberation. So, let's look at that. Karmanai vahi samsiddhim astita janakadayaha lokasangrahame vapi sampashyan kartum arhasi. Karmanaiva hi samsiddhim. By performing karma itself, samsiddhi, perfection was attained. By whom? Astita was attained by Janaka Adayaha, by Maharaj Janaka and other persons like him. Loka Sangraham evapi. Therefore, for the sake of Loka Sangraha, संपश्यन कर्तुम अर्हसि। संपश्यन, संपश्यन मीन्स सी सिस्टमैटिकली, कंसिडर। सो लोक संग्रह इज सेटिंग एन एग्जाम्पल ऑफ अदर। संग्रह एक्चुअली मीन्स एक्यूमुलेशन और मेंटेनेंस। सो मेंटेन द लोकस। हाउ आर द लोकस मेंटेन? बाय प्रॉपर एग्जाम्पल। सो लोक संग्रह एवापि संपश्यन कर्तुम। Therefore, considering that, you should act properly. So he's saying that in the past also, there are many people who were liberated by doing their prescribed duty. So don't think that the prescribed duties cannot bring liberation. By doing one's prescribed duties, also one can move forward. And as one keeps moving forward steadily, by performance of prescribed duties, eventually one becomes liberated. Eventually one attains liberation. So in this way, by telling Arjuna that it is not the activity that causes bondage, it is actually one's internal mentality. If one is detached, then one will not be bound. But if, while being detached, one does one's duties, then one will be able to set a good example for others also. So you see, therefore, for loka sangraha, please do your duties. And from the next verse, Krishna will give his own example. And this is the first point, first place in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna will talk about his supreme position explicitly. He hinted at it in 2.61, but here he will talk about a little more directly in 3.22 and 33. Let's discuss that in the next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.